is going on, everybody? Welcome to Five Rounds Today. John Ramdean and Robin Black with you. As always, there is a slew of things to discuss in today's show. Of course, one of the most anticipated cards maybe ever. Certainly one of the most anticipated fights going down at UFC 202. All the action happening August 20th at the T-Mobile Arena in Sin City in Las Vegas. It's the rematch between Conor McGregor and Nathan Diaz. Nate Diaz, known to the masses. You would figure that's all they need to put on this fight card.
That's it. I don't need anything else.
That's it, right?
Yeah,
that, it's like, okay, tune in around 11:30. Yeah. However, the co-main event, Anthony Rumble Johnson and Glover Teixeira.
Okay, that's good. We're done.
Exactly.
We're good.
Neil Magny, Lorenz Larkin, Donald Cowboy Cerrone taking on Rick Story, Cody Garbrandt, Takeo Mizugaki, Tim Means, Sean Strickland. I mean, just a solid night of mixed martial arts. Kind of everything you're hoping for if you're a fight fan. You get some high drama because the main event.
Yeah.
You got
and
Donald Cerrone.
And killer martial arts.
And killer martial arts, of course. Yeah. I'm pretty sure we're probably going to get to see a knockout in the co-main event between Rumble and Teixeira, right?
Yeah. A finish for sure. Teixeira could choke him up.
What do you hope for when you are watching a mixed martial arts card? Like, do you like get to process that? Because I know there's a lot of times where a fight card's happening, you have people over at your house, you go to somebody's. Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff going on. You said that you watched 201, UFC 201 in Los Angeles by yourself.
That was fun. Well, I started out by myself. I was commentating Shooto Brazil 65 on the Sunday night. So Saturday night was UFC 201. I'm in Burbank, California to call the Shooto card. And I'm like, oh, I got to watch the fights.
Yeah.
So I just literally went on, I think it was either UFC.com or just Google, and it's like, where's the closest place?
Yeah.
And this place popped up, The Office in Burbank, and it is a killer dive bar.
Yeah.
And that's my speed, right?
Yeah,
and the townies took to me pretty quick.
Cool.
You know, like there was a couple guys who really were there to watch fights. And 201, probably not the most, you know, bought pay-per-view ever, but the place was pretty full and people were there to watch the fights.
Cool.
Yeah. Also, it's like 3:30 p.m. when the Fight Pass stuff is on. It's 5 when the undercard on the West Coast. So if you're in a bar drinking beer at 5 p.m. on a Saturday, you're probably either left over from drinking beer at noon or you're out for a purpose. So, yeah, it was really fun. I met a lot of really, really cool people. And fighting, like anything that you really enjoy, can bring people together.
Yeah.
I didn't know the 6 people sitting around me. And then pretty quickly I did.
Now, I think maybe part of the reason is, as you pointed out, this was designed for hardcore fight fans. That you have to go and search this specific location. Have you ever watched fights at Boston Pizza?
I have.
And very different experience, I would imagine.
It can be. It definitely can be.
It's the worst. I won't do it again.
I know Mullins, my friend Mullins goes. But I've been to that kind of event. And usually if I'm going to something like that, it'll be with my group of people.
Yeah.
And the people I like to watch fights with love fights. You know, they watch most of them. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, you go to that kind of environment sometimes. It's weird because I take this sort of, it's in my nature. If there's some people around that kind of half watching or they're not really sure, now I want to that as a challenge. I want them to know about how cool this is. Mike Brown said that to me. It's like, you're just a guy who's like crazy about fighting and you want everyone else to see it. I'm like, He goes, yeah, me too.
Yeah. You know? That's what it is. So UFC 202, I would expect that we're doing a big show here, probably pre and post. Mm-hmm. If that wasn't the case, would it be the same? Have all your people around you
for big ones
like this magnitude?
So this fight, you gotta whether you are Team Diaz or you're Team McGregor or you just love great fights, you gotta go back and watch the first one first of all.
Yeah.
It really is something very special. Like the moment in time where you bring in two great fighters or athletes or artists or whatever is always special. But these ones, their personalities are expressed in the way they fight. When you think of Diaz, that's his personality you're watching. Bruce Lee used to say that, you know, you're expressing your personality in artistic form. Nate Diaz fights the way Nate Diaz thinks, you know. And Conor McGregor, he wears that flim-flam personality out there in the cage too. So you've got that. You've got the drama. You've got the psychic battle, the movement of energy between the two. Diaz managed that fight very brilliantly, and he's going to try to do it again. I think this fight will look a lot different, but the tension's so high. So I'll want to watch it with a very small group.
If you haven't seen the first fight, Fight Network, we're thrilled to present a Nathan Diaz special, looking back at some of his career highlights, and included in that show will be the Conor McGregor fight. So next week, check your listings for details. Unfortunately, if you're outside of Canada, you'll just have to illegally get it somehow.
There's a Fight Network stream somewhere, maybe. I don't know.
But when we look at this main event, the rematch between Conor McGregor and Nathan Diaz, I'm actually surprised that Conor's the favorite going into the rematch, considering everything that transpired in the first fight, because Conor has always had the mental edge. And any of his past opponents, he's been able to mess with them, kind of throw them off their game. It didn't work with Nathan Diaz. They had that press conference. So right there was kind of a failure. And then you go into the performance. He's fighting in a weight class that he'd never fought at before. He didn't have his – I mean, he had a good performance. I think that's
– Round one, did fantastic.
So good. However, because of this new weight class, because normally fighters at 145 pounds or 155 pounds, he hits them with their left hand, they go down.
Yeah. Nate Diaz, I've been hit like that lots.
A lot of times. Yeah.
So somebody will say you're making excuses for McGregor. Are those excuses?
No, they're not excuses at all. Not at all. The realities of things. It's like, well, you don't know until you know.
Yeah.
And now you know.
Well, I think that's it. If you are emotionally triggered by your love of Conor McGregor or your hatred of Conor McGregor or your desire to cheer for the 209 or whatever, you might react a certain way. But if we look at the realities, you're usually bigger, now you're smaller. Is that an excuse?
No, but
reality,
it's a reality,
right?
Yeah.
You normally have longer reach, and now you do not have longer reach. Is that an excuse?
That's a reality.
That's a reality. You're normally bigger, now you're smaller. Yeah. You fight best against southpaw, against orthodox fighters, there's another southpaw. You normally can crack these guys mentally. This guy can't be cracked. Those are not excuses. Those are truths.
Yeah.
And it's like, I normally crack my guys, but you didn't crack. That's not only not an excuse, that's a credit to the man who would not crack. So these are – it depends how you look at things. These are excuses or these are successes. They're successes of Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz won that fight. He won it not only fair and square, but brilliant.
So my question is, when there's all these truths of successes, Nate Diaz doing all these things, not folding, this and that, why is Conor still the favorite going into this rematch? We've got to take a break. When we come back, Robin has the answer to my question. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Before the break, I asked the question, when you look at all the factors leading into the rematch between Conor McGregor and Nathan Diaz, that Conor kind of failed, but Nate Diaz had triumphs throughout that matchup.
Yeah.
When you look at Conor was the smaller guy, Nate came in on short notice, all these different factors. Why is Conor McGregor the favorite going into this rematch?
Well, the short answer is he's more popular.
Is that it? Is that what it is?
They want some of that Irish money coming in. But having said that, what is different? To recap quickly, in every other fight, he was the taller man. He had the longer reach. He was the bigger man. He hit harder. And
southpaw.
If he fought, a southpaw is a challenge, particularly a southpaw with all of those advantages now. All of that is still true. What's changed? He knows it now.
Yeah,
he knows it. Before, it was like, he was fighting RDA, going up a division, but it's not really up a division. And then, I always have guys falling out. Because they always had guys falling out, they never prepared for an opponent. They never did. Never. They prepared themselves to fight. And the main reason was because almost every fight he had in the UFC, the opponent left and a new guy was in. If I prepared like crazy for you, you're 6 foot,
6'1",
you're 6'1", you're tall, you have your right hand forward, whatever your attributes are, and now I got a 5'10", you know, big chested guy who runs fast, he's a southpaw. I mean, all of that would have been wasted, and they wasted it a few times, him coming up, and then realized, oh shit, we spent all that effort preparing for a specific opponent, and it never was that opponent. Now, they're prepared. Yes, Diaz has all that time to prepare, but Connor's preparing for all of those tests.
The question I guess I want to ask is the philosophy out there. We've talked to many coaches, many athletes. I always reference this. And one of the things when I'm asking a fighter about a specific opponent, coming up on the show, we have Court McGee, who's taking on Dominic Steele. And I could ask him, you know, what are you preparing for? Because I've asked that question before. Yeah. What do you expect from Dominic Steele? And the majority of people, fighters and coaches, say, I don't care with what they're doing. Yeah. I don't care what they bring to the table. I'm going to do me. I'm going to do Rory McDonald. I'm going to do Robbie Lawler, whoever.
Uriah Faber.
Yeah. So why are guys strategizing when it's like, okay, I have this opponent, but he may drop out. Why don't I just do my own thing?
Because, well, you should. You should do your own thing. You should master what you do. Some of that your own thing involves improving your ability to learn in the fight and adapt in the fight and recognize what you're seeing in the fight. So if you can improve those things, every opponent becomes a little easier to deal with in the fight. Even better than that would be if the actual opponent is going to show up, let's improve all those things and prepare for the realities of this opponent. And in Nate Diaz's case, you saw from that fight, there's a lot of realities to deal with. Now, what's the difference? We didn't know really what they meant because we were underprepared and he beat us. Now, we know what they mean and we're going to go in prepared. Truth is, he might still beat you. That's why we watch fights. That's why fighting isn't just cheer for the guy you like better, although you can do that.
Yeah.
People do that for their football team from their town, you know?
I do that for my, like, again, as much as I love watching Tyron Woodley, Robbie Lawler's one of my guys.
Yeah.
So watching Robbie Lawler at 201, I'm rooting for Robbie Lawler. Yeah. However, I jumped off my chair and I was cheering when Tyron Woodley knocked him out.
See, but the difference is neither of those guys has pushed that public emotional buttons of you and everybody else.
Right.
Part of, you know, I mean, we try to avoid politics because everybody should try to avoid politics.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at what's going on in politics in America, the people go – and I don't mean watch any of that crap on TV. You know, don't watch CNN. But just go on Facebook and somebody says something and then the other people freak out.
Freak out.
But that kind of engagement is modern. And it's not good. It's not good for our society. It isn't. There's no way that it is. But we grew up, this whole generation and the last few generations, we've grown up on reality TV and, you know, getting drawn into the story and the Kardashians.
Manufactured stories, too.
Yeah. So if you're a politician, manufacture a bunch of crazy stuff. Get people engaged. Engagement is what's important. We had this conversation the other day on the desk. If you go right now and you give Nick Diaz the title fight with Tyron Woodley.
People are going to lose their minds.
And all of them are going to get the pay-per-view.
They're all going to watch it.
Yeah, and all of them.
I can't wait to see that guy get his ass kicked. He doesn't deserve that.
Exactly. And the ones who freak out, not only might they watch it, or probably they'll watch it, but their freaking out, their emotion will reach way more people. It'll reach all over Facebook. And I use that example because I have a Canadian friends that are literally arguing about American politics because they're so emotional.
Yeah.
That type of emotional engagement is what people are seeking. And that's why they loved Ronda and or hated Ronda. That's why, you know, they loved Connor and or hated Connor. That ability, I mean, if you are going on message boards and going back a 12th and a 14th time to argue whether or not this guy sucks and he's overhyped, you're dropping in.
See, I just don't know. It's hard for me to understand because, you know, there's already so much emotional drama inside of that cage. Now, of course, I've never been a professional mixed martial arts fighter, but I've been in dust-ups before, and it's terrifying.
Yeah, of course it is.
So imagine to try to put yourself in a scenario where the person standing across the cage has been training to kick the living shit out of you.
Yeah, for years.
Exactly. But specifically for the last 10 weeks because they've watched the things that you're good at.
He's got your picture up.
How is that not emotional?
It is. It is.
So that's difficult for me to understand why people need something other than the emotions attached to fighting.
I don't. Yeah, me neither. I mean, but things wear off. Like cat videos 5 years ago.
I don't
ago.
Know if they're going to wear off, yeah. the cat videos.
But you need better cat videos and fancier cat videos.
Sure. Jingle Cats, I think, still comes out every Christmas and people freak out.
Porn in the 70s was way tamer than
unfamiliar with what you're referring to.
Well, I've heard about this stuff. But it's something that reaches people emotionally. It was way tamer.
Yeah.
It's way further down. It's wherever it's going. And the same thing with the way you present. I mean, I've said this before. Rihanna takes a picture of herself on Instagram with her boobs.
I actually checked that, and you're right.
Exactly. Because just Rihanna being beautiful and singing no longer reaches people.
Weird to
me. So she's got to push it further. Sad, really. But same thing. Just fighting. And this, I know you and I, and there are others like us, we look at a part of our job, because we're real marks, as making people not forget about the fight itself is amazing. Like, and it's not, yes, of course, the fact that there are these two characters in Diaz and Connor, and they're emotional, and they talk, and they say stuff. Of course, that's going to be also interesting. But every time we take two human beings, and they dedicate their life to this moment, and we bring them together, and there's paramedics sitting right there.
Right there.
And those doctors are sitting right there because of the real danger that's happening every time. Every one of those should be celebrated. But over time, they're not. We forget. Or as humans, the treadmill goes, and we stay in the same place, even though it gets crazier. And, you know, we need more stimulation. People smoked pot in the 60s, and the stuff today, it's not the same stuff. That stuff is just some plant.
Again, I don't know what you're talking about. I've been told that.
I've been told this. I'm referencing things that are fairly public knowledge. But it's the truth. I mean, why the heck wouldn't that – well, people would be like, I'm not getting nothing off
this.
When I was a kid, vanilla ice cream was really tasty. That now it's going to have peanut butter cups in it and chocolate covered whatever and white chocolate and swirls and three flavors. And if it doesn't, you're like, oh, I don't.
Moose tracks.
Yeah.
Like moose shit in your ice cream. Yeah. That's what people.
It's not actual.
No, but it's moose pieces of crap. Whew, that's actual chocolate. Yeah. That's what people need in their ice cream. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we have to leave on that note because it's disgusting. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Before the break, we were talking about the main event between Conor McGregor and Nathan Diaz, the rematch going down at UFC 202 happening at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas on August 20th. The rest of the card, Rumble Johnson, Teixeira, Neil Magny, Lorenz Larkin, Cerrone, Rick Story, Cody Garbrandt climbing the ranks, taking on Takeo Mizugaki. I would imagine that if he beats Mizugaki, he'd probably find himself in a title spot, no?
Maybe. I mean, that
there was a running out of
young.
Guys at 35.
Yeah, I guess. But do you really want to? I mean, he wants it, but but do you really want to throw him in there? The distance between what he's experienced and what Demetrius Johnson. You just saw an Olympic gold medalist who was undefeated get taken out of there like that. But I guess you need to put someone in there. It's just he's not. There's that, you know. Unconsciously not aware.
35.
Yeah, yeah. What's
35. That? Demetrius, it was 25.
25.
You're saying, yeah. So it's 35.
Of course.
There's so many friggin' fights. We're talking about all the shows that are happening.
Cruz, that's even worse.
Exactly.
That's even worse.
Him.
Oh, of course. That's an even worse scenario.
But, I mean, when is it ever a good scenario? It's like, okay, well, I'm climbing the ranks. My goal is to become the champion. I guess right now if you're at 170 pounds, it's like, okay, well, if you're Rory McDonald, it's like, well, Tyron Woodley, perfect.
I beat him already.
Yeah. But
might motivate him to sign back with the UFC.
Maybe. Yeah. But if you're a guy like Cody Garbrandt, and you look at the top of the division, and you see Dominic Cruz, do you see a guy that is beatable? Do you see a guy, when you look at what happened with Uriah Faber and you look at TJ Dillashaw, guys that you've been around, guys that are better than you.
Presumably,
experience-wise and whatnot. They couldn't beat him. But the goal in this game is, you know, we heard from any fighters that the goal is to get to the top of the mountain, get that money.
So, yeah, I mean, does he see him as beatable? And what is the better way to look at him? I can beat that guy. Let me fight him, especially if you're going to get a decent payday. And if you get a setback, you're young.
You can get
the experience.
Exactly.
Better for the young guy to taste that, have it go wrong, and then go, I see what the mountain is, and I'll go back. But, you know, he talks about Dominic Cruz not being able to really generate power. He did hurt. He did hurt Uriah.
Yeah,
and Uriah's hard to hurt, man.
Looks like he hurt TJ too.
Yeah, he did hurt TJ. There is a push and a pull, a connection in a relationship between mobility and the ability to generate power. And TJ Dillashaw is kind of more in the middle. He moves more like Cruz than
Garbrandt
does. But he can deliver more power than Cruz does. There's a relationship between them, and that relationship starts with how connected to the ground you are. Lineker would be the even further. Have
power-wise.
We had him and Garbrandt yet?
Not yet. That's going to happen. Especially right now. And I say that because Garbrandt is kind of the guy.
Yeah.
You knock out the stud, Thomas Almeida.
He was handsome, dancing with the stars.
Exactly.
He was stuffing that with the girl. They were together. They had a thing.
So
a relationship.
You get that knockout win over Thomas Almeida. You have this fight with Takeo Mizugaki. You manage to stop Takeo Mizugaki. Sure, you might have one or two guys in front of you challenging Dominic Cruz. But sooner rather than later, you're going to be in that spot, especially if you're stopping guys.
Yeah, and good for him. And the swagger sometimes is real, and sometimes it's a bit real and a lot more like, I know this will make me money to advertise that swagger. But, you know, when he's like, wow, Cruz says he wants super fights, trying to avoid me. Yeah, really. He's decided to rather fight Frankie Edgar.
Or
Demetrius Johnson. You know what I mean? But still, you like that swagger out of that kid. He's fun to watch, you know. And he is, you know, power is Lineker.
Yeah.
And mobility is Cruz.
Yeah.
And the guys on the end of mobility are slowly trying to, without giving up mobility, create more power. And the guys on the power side are trying to add more mobility. TJ Dillashaw and Dwayne are trying to find that perfect spot. Lineker was talking about fighting Dominic Cruz, too. It's like, if you can't touch him, you can't knock him out.
Yeah.
He knocks everybody out, but the distance between the two and their ability to move is so dramatic. If you put Dominic Cruz in front of him and say, Lineker, knock out Dominic Cruz, like, okay, boom, you can lay him out.
Yeah.
But you have to line up a scenario in which case he's in front of you, not rolling and being mobile. I can't see that happening in five fights.
What about Justin Scoggins? Now, moving from 125 pounds up to 135 pounds, he seems to be a good balance between mobility and power.
I think so. We haven't seen as much of him, but Mike Brown had great things to say about him and how hard he was to understand and get a beat on when they were just play sparring. He has the potential. Too bad the kid couldn't make weight and is now moving, because he actually would look like one of these guys who, because he's different will at least create a round or a two challenge for Demetrius. And when you create a round or a two challenge, maybe in that round or two you hurt him or you get to him or you catch him with something. At 135, Dominic is seriously. When you see him, you don't think of athlete isn't the first thing that comes to mind. But that direction change and agility and speed and rhythm—that's all athletics. That's all athletic attributes.
You're right. When I think of Dominic Cruz, I don't think of that. I think of kind of smug prick. Dominic Cruz. We love him.
Hey, man, if you were the best in the world at like a few things, I mean. Don't you have moments where you're like, every single one of us, you'll just do something decent. It's like you pick up your dog's poo, but you get it all.
You're smug for a second.
Imagine
nobody can do that.
See, there's not even nothing left. Or just anything. Like, you know, there are moments in anyone's day where for a brief instant, they're like, you see the way I killed washing those dishes? They're clean as hell, and I got them all done quick. That can happen to anyone. Imagine you're the champion of the world. Your ego is a real thing. We all have one. Yeah. It all sits there over time. And sometimes you lose control of it for a minute or two, hopefully only a minute or two, because it can kill you. if you get two, that one of the biggest downfalls of anybody who's good at anything is they suddenly think they're amazing and they're unstoppable. Then if you're the best anything in the world, why would you have to go put in 20 hard hours a week training kickboxing if you're the best kickboxer in the world? I mean, I'll just show up and I'll kill this guy. Luke Rockhold had moments of that in his face. You could see it when he fought Bisping. Your ego must be under control. But I think Dom has his perfectly under control because he has an obsessive desire to always get better. So no matter how good he is, he can be slightly smug about it because he's the best. And
he outworks
people.
He's
naturally going to outwork you. Yeah. So, I mean, if I was as good as him at anything, I'd be pretty smug.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're looking at all the fight night action going down in Salt Lake City. We will hear from Court McGee, who will be in action against Dominic Steele at 170 pounds. Welcome back to the show. We are happy to be joined by Court McGee, who takes on Dominic Steele this Saturday night in Salt Lake City, Utah. Court, thanks so much for the time. How are you feeling going into this battle in your neck of the woods?
Great. I'm pumped and excited. I didn't think I'd have a chance to fight in front of, you know, my local fans, especially in the UFC. I just didn't ever think it was. We were told that they weren't ever going to come to Utah again. They tried.
Which, it really, sorry to cut you off, that really doesn't make sense to me because we've been following mixed martial arts for a long time. And if you've followed MMA for any length of time, you know the name Jeremy Horn. I know you've battled Jeremy Horn in the past. It just seems like a town that would be filled with fight fans.
Oh, yeah. We have a huge mixed martial arts community. I mean, there's so many gyms, so many competitors. There's small venues that go on all the time. We have a huge community in mixed martial arts. So it's going to be really exciting for everybody. Everybody who gets to go, for the community and for all the UFC fans, especially, you know, here in Utah, that they get a chance to go.
Is there added pressure for you to go out and perform? You seem like a guy that doesn't let pressure affect you, but you say you want this.
No, there's pressure with every single fight. And it's just, you know, I mean, the majority of the fight is in your head. But no, I don't feel like there's any added pressure whatsoever. The pressure's high enough. It's a high caliber fight. It's a fight in the UFC. It's my career. I take it very serious. I'm just glad that my fans, friends, and family get to come and watch me, you know, and not have to travel halfway across the country. So I think more people would be available to show up, and it's like we can share the experience together.
Court, when I watch you fight, and, you know, obviously your ruggedness, your toughness, your mental toughness is a big feature of the way you fight, but there's a real flavor to your fighting style, like a lunch bucket, hard hat, work boots kind of blue-collar flavor. Is that something you agree with? Is that something you can take pride in?
Yeah. I mean, I can't be the best at everything, and I've always said this too. You know, because people ask me what your background are, what do you do, what's this, what are you best at, and it's like, I feel like I'm well-rounded, and I feel like conditioning's, you know, the most important thing, and then constant improvement. You know, of course, I'm always improving and adapting and trying to get better partners, better wrestlers, better strikers, you know, figure new things out, and you have an opportunity for that, but now's the time to compete, now's the time to fight, and so the most important thing is, you know, in between training camps, I improve on that, but then get in shape and ready to compete and beat the best guys in the world. So it's just, you know, being well-rounded, being rugged, being tough, and, you know, just having the will to win and, you know, not giving up five minutes before the miracle happens. You know, just keep moving forward, keep working, and, you know, that's just, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a specific philosophy? Because we have the luxury of talking to trainers and fighters from all over the world, and not everybody seems to be on the same page. An argument that's happening right now is it important to spend time on strength and conditioning, or should you spend the time that you're spending on the strength and conditioning and work specifically on skill development? What is your philosophy?
Well, I mean, I've broke it down. So I incorporate my strength and conditioning with my training. So, like, for instance, one of my conditioning workouts, and I would call it my strength and conditioning workout, is rowing on a Concept 2 rower. And I have certain times and certain intervals that I go for. And one's like a 1,000-meter sprint, and then I grapple with somebody for 5 minutes. Sometimes I'm top position, sometimes I'm bottom position, sometimes they have my back and they have their hooks in, and I have to escape and get to my feet. But I get myself exhausted, and then I have to, you know, get out and escape. And so it's like I kind of incorporate my conditioning with my training. And then later that night, I do grappling, and where I struggled in certain positions, I focus on improving. So the second workout is more drilling and maybe 3 or 4 or 5 rounds of live grappling, whereas my first practice is focused on, you know, hard conditioning, overexert myself, and escape from bad positions.
Have you always been doing
this? I like to incorporate it.
Have you always been doing this, or has it been a trial and error type thing?
No, I've been doing this for the last 6 years, and I do another one too. Well, I base both of my nasty, hard workouts off of the positions where people lose fights the most, and that's on their back and against the cage.
That's brilliant.
So I do another one that's called wall wrestling. So those are my two hard ones, and then I have one day specifically that is hardcore old-school conditioning where I push a prowler, I use a sledge, I throw a 100-pound D-ball, but before that, I either drill with a partner back and forth, I do some live sparring rounds before, or I do pad work, mitt work, ground and pound work, and technical grappling, and then I go straight into my hard conditioning. So I'm fresh off the start, and then, you know, then I go into my hard conditioning. And then I have my separate days, too, where I have just sparring, and then I have one where I'm just grappling, where I'm just wrestling, and then another one where I'm just striking. I feel like I can improve all through my training camp, and when the pressure's not on, then maybe I'll hit 5 or 6 days of grappling in a week, you know, and throw the gi on, or I'll go to some kickboxing, or I'll do a lot of, you know, pad work or something like that. But I don't know, constant improvement is important to adapt as a mixed martial artist. And for me, it's a lifestyle, and it's been that way since I was 7 years old. So it's always changing. There's always something new. There's always something a little different. But I like to stick to my guns. I like to stick with what works for me. And, you know, but I'm always open-minded to new things. So
a really interesting thing amongst a ton of really interesting concepts that you brought out there, physiologically speaking, one that sort of attracted my ear right away was going out and exerting hard and then competing in a difficult environment. And so you're creating kind of a hypoxic environment in your body. And what's interesting about that to me is it suits your mental style and your get-in-your-face style, because the way it works best is if you draw the other guy into an equally hypoxic environment. So his body is stressed too. Now both of you are in a stressful situation,
but you know
that
how to deal
you
with
are
it.
Way more yeah. experienced in. Is that the thinking?
Yes, that's exactly it. And, I mean, obviously you want to outclass the guy, beat the guy, be faster than him, but sometimes you're just not, you know. I mean, I'm fighting the best guys in the world, and so it's like I can't control being a world champion, the best striker in the world. I can constantly improve on it and get better and get better and adapt and get better, but I get myself, you know, from both angles where – I start out and I'm doing fresh sparring and I'm doing everything, or fresh grappling or fresh wrestling, you know, but getting in that, you know, it's like, you know, I know for a fact I'm going to get exhausted and tired. Mm-hmm. But what happens when I get exhausted and tired? It's a damn fight. I know I'm going to exert myself and be exhausted and tired and bloody, but can I keep my hands up? Can I throw good straight combinations? Can I still move my feet? Am I still utilizing lateral movement? Am I still level changing? Can I finish a shot? Can I defend a submission?
Brilliant.
And I can, because I put myself through that for weeks and weeks and weeks before the fight.
And maybe
so I go in without irrational fears, thinking, oh my God, I got to, you know, I don't have to, I can kick all those irrational fears out of my head because I've been through the training. I've been to the complete exhaustion and then some, and I've still maintained. And so it's like, now it's just time to go out and to put into practical application everything that I've trained in this camp specifically and everything since the age of seven.
It's so smart. And in the end, because it suits you so well, if you put both of you in that environment, it becomes a balls up situation, and that's a situation you win.
Yep, yep, exactly.
When you look at your place in your division, the goal for most fighters is to get to the championship, get that big payday.
Absolutely.
What do you need to do? Because you look at the 170 waters right now, arguably the most difficult it's ever been. What do you need to do to be able to leapfrog guys and to get yourself into a position where you're fighting for the title?
And
the first thing is to obviously not overlook Dominic Steele. Go in there, have a dominant performance. But do you chart what you need to do to get that job done?
Yeah, I think about it, but I don't dwell on it. I don't, you know, I'm not trying to look so far into the future that I'm forgetting where I'm at right now. It's just like that. People, I'm going to walk through this guy and go on to the next guy. That has never been my experience, man. Every time that has ever come into my head, I kicked it out because that's not true. I mean, one little thing, one little mistake, it's mixed martial arts, man, and you got a 4-ounce glove on. Yeah. Shit happens. And so I don't ever overlook opponents, but I do look at that. Okay, what's the smart move? You know, and I've been in the game for over 6 years with the UFC, and I've been fighting for, I think, right about a decade professionally. And so my focus is, okay, let's go out and let's put on a dominant performance, and then we figure out later. But the idea, you know, is kind of like, okay, let's go a top 30, top 20, top 10, get into title contention and be smart and go for that belt.
The last thing, what type of performance do you expect to have against Dominic Steele on Saturday?
A great one.
Well, I promise you, we'll be watching. All the action goes down in Salt Lake City this Saturday night. Court McGee taking on Dominic Steele. Court, thanks so much for the time and best of luck in Salt Lake City.
Thank you so much.
That was a great conversation, man. We really appreciate it.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, more of the show. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean and Black with you. Great conversation with Court McGee. Uh-huh. He just doesn't seem like a talker. When you look at the guy, I don't think, man, that guy's got a bunch of stuff to say.
Yeah. Maybe, I mean, some of these guys who are insane workers, and he is, obviously.
Clearly.
Hard workers, proud of the work that they've done. Sometimes there's 400 of them. Sometimes people don't talk to them that much when they get a chance to get, to express themselves. Very smart guy. One thing you always like, I don't know if like's the right word, you appreciate, especially from a fighting standpoint. We were talking about it earlier. Nate Diaz's fighting style is Nate Diaz as a fighting style. It's that guy expressed as a fighting style. You hear this guy talk? That's who he is.
That is
he trains that way. Yeah. He fights that way. He is that way. He thinks that way. That's cool. That's why they are successful. It makes sense. Their character is in line with their expression.
I wish we had more time with him because there was a couple of times that he referenced, I've been doing this since I was 7 years old. And both times he mentioned that specific age, and I would like to know what at seven, kind of set the tone or set the pace for everything he was going to do in his life.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. And of course, this is one area of him that's been talked a lot about, but he wandered into some dark places in his
drug
life.
Abuse.
Yeah, and I think meth.
Yeah,
you know?
I thought it was heroin, heroin.
Something heavy duty.
Something that not only you're not supposed to be doing, but you're not coming back from that.
A lot of people don't come back. So that alone, and it would be interesting to get to talk to him about that too, because that isn't And this references what something we were just saying, you know, you think you're great or you think you accomplished something or you think, you know, I'm a great kickboxer. And all of a sudden you will become not a great kickboxer because you're not a great kickboxer. You're a guy who works so hard at kickboxing that right now you're very good and very sharp and very good at it. Being sober, I bet, is very much that way. If you're like, well, I got this thing licked.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And then that's when you let it down. That's when you let your guard down.
The question is, again, these are always things that pop in my head. Our friend Leo Lukes, former champion. Now a gentleman that coaches in London with some of the up-and-coming talent.
UFC fighters,
Jesse Ronson. He worked with Chad Laprise.
Yeah.
I don't know how much Leo trains right now. I don't know if he's in there going through the grind. I'm pretty sure if Joe Blow decided to go and challenge Leo to a fight, that Leo would kick the living shit out of that person.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, as much as you say that you have to keep working hard, isn't there a point where you acquire skills that you have for life?
Well, if Leo got up to whatever, you know, Bruce Lee or the greatest ever. Is Chuck Norris one of the greatest? No, he's not.
He's a great
dude. He's pretty good at karate.
Yeah.
Whatever the greatest ever was, if Leo, if that's 100 and Leo got to 88 or 92 in his life, well, even if he doesn't train and that whole skill atrophies, he's still at 60 or 70, which is enough to destroy every normal person that will ever bother him. So even you can get so far. We talked about this when George St. Pierre, back to that conversation you asked Court about conditioning versus skill. Later, people were like, well, George is like, I don't even weightlift anymore. Well, yeah, but you became a super athlete. So this super athlete who doesn't weightlift anymore still does physical activity.
He maintains.
He maintains or very close to it. People will often, you know, they'll use examples. Oh, well, he's not the fastest sprinter on the football team. No, but he still sprints faster than 99.98% of humans. These are all super athletes. And we're seeing now we'll come back to this. Let's try to get, next week, we're going to talk probably a lot about 202.
Yeah.
Let's get John Chamberg on the phone.
I'm down.
Because there's a lot of this going on right now. But Stipe Miocic is an elite athlete. Jones and Cormier, both elite athletes. Bisping's an athletically driven guy who works very hard. Look at Tyron Woodley, Eddie Alvarez,
Dominic Cruz. Yeah, the list. Demetrius
Johnson.
Amanda Nunes, the 135-pound champion. Yeah. I mean, she's an athlete.
And Zajacek is an athlete. These are athletes. There's not a floaty martial artist among them.
Yeah, right.
And Conor McGregor at 45 also, and Jose Aldo at 45. Yeah. They're athletes.
Yeah.
So this idea that, and it's out there, and it's being done in gyms right now. There are people going, I don't do that stuff. I just work on skill development. Well, every single champion in the whole world are very high-level, highly evolved athletes. So is this conversation over yet or no?
No, I think it's just going to keep evolving. I think, you know, things are going to go in waves. I think that because there's so many ways to skin a cat, so to speak, as Court said, you know, these methods work for me.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking to Cub Swanson. He said the same thing.
His were different,
like,
way
you know,
different. Courts are different than everybody. Chamberg, if I send him that clip, or any other strength and conditioning guy, will say what Court is doing is wrong.
Yeah.
But it ain't wrong for him, and it ain't wrong when he creates an environment in which you have to be in the same thing that he's in, and he's better at being in that than you are.
We're going to take another break. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up here in this edition of Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ramdean and Black with you discussing all the UFC action going down for UFC Fight Night happening this Saturday in Salt Lake City, Utah. It's headlined by Yair Rodriguez taking on Alex Caceres. I don't consider that the main event. As much as it's top billing, and I'm sure
it's an action fight.
It's an action fight. Rodriguez, yes, he's a prospect.
we'll just wait and see.
We're going to see how things are. We know Bruce Leroy, super entertaining. I'm sure these guys are going to give the fans what they deserve. But the second fight of the night, Cub Swanson, Tatsuya Kawajiri. That's my main event.
Me too.
Court McGee on this card, Talis Lytus on the card, Dennis Bermudez on the card. A lot of great names on the card, but Cub Swanson, Tatsuya Kawajiri. Can we talk about that for a couple of minutes?
Yeah.
Cub really seems to be in a different place mentally. He says he's been working a lot on his wrestling. And I think when you look at why that is, Kawajiri, a wrestler, and most of Cub's losses have come against wrestlers.
Yeah,
Chad Mendez and Frankie Edgar. I'm not going to say Kawajiri is like them, but he's more like them than some of the other guys that Cub Swanson's faced. Jose Aldo and Max Holloway, two of the other losses. So, yes, it makes sense. What do you expect to see from this fight? Outside mobility, trying to break him down with kicks, trying to use his MMA boxing to take out the Japanese fight legend.
Well, it was interesting because I figured Cub Swanson would be thinking, you know, and he's brilliant. So I'm certainly not undermining him. In fact, I like his thought process more than I liked mine. Was that he'd be on the outside. This man's going to pursue him. When he pursues him, we're going to crack him.
Yeah.
It's, you know, Kawajiri, his striking will not be as evolved. And he needs to get all the way in on him. So that space all the way in is Cub Swanson land. He's going to beat him up. And Cub actually came back, and it's because I think he's thinking actively. Not, how do I react to this guy, but what do I do to him? And it is, he said he wants to get in the in-between. He does, outside, he thinks Kawajiri will be all the way out trying to get all the way in. All the way out is fine, but there's two ways to get all the way in. He comes in, or Cub goes in. And I think Cub's like wants to instigate. And I think it's because mentally he knows he does well when he does that. And I think he's going to try to get in. Then when Kawajiri comes in, retreat from there. But keep that in. Keep the chaos zone, you know?
Can Kawajiri frustrate Cub Swanson with his durability and toughness that Cub's like, okay, when I get Kawajiri in a position, I'll be able to take him out. I'll be able to land my hands on his chin and he will not be moving forward because he'll be laid out. Is that a truth? Or is it Kawajiri just keeps going through the fire and messing with Cub?
I think the biggest thing, he'll be fine, but I think the biggest reason he'll be fine is because he's had that experience lots, especially like Jeremy Stephens.
Yeah.
Jeremy Stephens is in there till the last 30 seconds. And that was Cub Swanson has a brilliant body of work. Go back and watch it. It's just had some wonderful fights. But that one's an amazing one. And Jeremy Stephens, it's like at some point in there, it's like, oh, I hit him with the heat. And he's still, okay, so this is going to go all the way. All right. Well, sometimes once you surrender to the fact that it's going all the way is when these guys loosen up and knock people out anyways.
That is it for us. Another show in the books. We got to thank our man Court McGee for joining us on the show earlier in the day. Of course, it didn't go down here, but also got to thank Cub Swanson for giving us the time. Next week, we'll take a look at UFC 202, that entire card. Of course, the main event between Nathan Diaz and Conor McGregor. For Robin Black, our producer Chase Kaiser, I'm John Ramdean. Thanks so much for tuning in to Five Rounds Today. We'll see you guys next week.